Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division meeting for today, March 11th. We have an ambitious agenda, members, and we don't have access to the room after hours tonight. So I would really encourage people to prepare their questions and try to move quickly through the agenda. Again, a heads up that we could go a couple minutes past 2:30, but it's really my intention to get all of these bills through today. It's a little like O'Hare Airport on a foggy day with our committee. The bills are stacking up, and we got to get them through because we're going to have another agenda like this next week. So I'd rather get through ours as the bills come. So our first item is House File 672. Representative Detmer, members, you'll recall we heard this in large part last week, and Representative Detmer was very helpful in terms of clarifying a few things, and he'll explain that, and I think we'll be ready to go. So I'll move your bill. We do have a small fiscal note as well, members, which should be in your packets, but I will move this bill to probably, I think we need to go to Representative Leaders Committee because of the fiscal note, even though it's a small one. So I will move that we pass and re-refer House File 672 to Transportation, Finance, and Policy. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Representative Holbrook. I might move the DE, delete all amendments, 0083, because I think that's the way that Representative Detmer would like to discuss the bill, and
okay,
I would raise a number of concerns,
we'll move the,
and I think the concerns are addressed in the amendment. If you want to expedite this hearing today, and we'll deal with the money issue in Representative Leaders Committee.
Thank you. Representative Holbrook moves the A3 amendment. Are there questions about the amendment? Just getting the bill in the shape that the author would like. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misheard. It's the A09-0083 amendment. Not the
right.
A3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. And we have the bill now in the shape the author would like it.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And again, I'm not going to go through the bill. I just, we reinstated the language that for the intent of the bill, as Representative Holbrook pointed out at the last hearing. And then if you look online, 111 and 112, basically, I just reinstated that language. And then on line 127, I deleted the and certified so that the language is the way it was intended to be.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Morrow has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, no, I just want to also acknowledge that Representative Detmer did make the change that we had talked about earlier. I appreciate making the change. The bus companies I talked to were glad to see that, and I hope the bill can move on now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions of the author or discussions? Okay, then I will renew my motion that House File 672, as amended, be re-referred to Transportation, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I will hand the gavel over to our able Vice Chair, Representative Swales, and we'll move on to House File 1047.
Representative Hornstein, would you like to move your bill?
I'd like to move my bill and move some snacks, Madam Chair. No, I'd like to move House File 1047. I believe, Madam Chair, that this can go to the
Environment.
Okay.
Environment Policy Committee.
Okay.
Is what we're looking for. So.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Chair Hornstein moves that House File 1047. Statewide goals amended for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions You recommended the pass and re-referred to the Environment Policy Committee. Would you like to speak to your bill?
Yes, thank you. First, members, though, I will speak to these snacks. These are called Hummantaschen. They are a Jewish snack that we serve during this very joyous holiday of Purim that we are now in. Actually, yesterday was the day that we celebrated Purim here, but today they celebrate it in Jerusalem because it's a walled city. It's a long story, but I will refrain in the interest of time of telling the story of Purim, but I would be happy to let folks know about that after the hearing. But anyway, these are called Hummantaschen, and please enjoy.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein. And now to your bill.
Okay. This is a very simple two-sentence bill that simply puts into statute a goal that the governor's climate advisory group had, and that is that we reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector by 25%, and this is in accordance with the timelines that were set out in the Greenhouse Gas Committee. Members, we're doing this because the transportation sector does contribute 25% of the greenhouse gas emissions overall. I feel it's very, very important that we acknowledge this and set a course of action to address it. Most of the activity here at the legislature on climate change has been primarily through the Energy Committee and through sources from power plants and industry. But we have a very, very large responsibility here in the transportation sector. And so I have one testifier, and we can move on from there.
All right. Thank you. Would you please introduce yourself, please, for the tape?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Bly. I'm the Transportation Policy Director for Fresh Energy, a Minnesota organization advocating for transition to cleaner energy alternatives, including clean and accessible transportation alternatives. As Representative Hornstein indicated, through the work of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, a number of recommendations have been made in terms of how the state is going to achieve the very ambitious reduction targets for global warming pollution that were created through the Next Generation Energy Act. Starting from baseline conditions in 2005, from the transportation sector, current emissions from transportation represent about a quarter of all global warming pollution. And what this bill does is it basically then says, looking forward into the future, proportionally the reduction should come in a comparable ratio of 25% from transportation. Fresh Energy supports this bill. We're happy to see it move forward. I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much. Do any members have any questions? All right, seeing none, I have a Mr. McDaniel from Flint Hills Resources who would like to speak. Is he present? Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Okay, would you please identify yourself for the tape?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Megan McDaniel, and I'm with Colt Companies representing Flint Hills Resources today. In the interest of time, I will be brief. As you know, Flint Hills Resources operates the Pine Bend Refinery in Rosemount, Minnesota. We are the upper Midwest leading producer of transportation fuels, providing much of the gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel that helps power our region. House File 1047 would amend state law by making the transportation sector responsible for achieving 25% of the state's greenhouse gas goals. While Flint Hills Resources understands the state's desire to lower greenhouse gas emissions, we are concerned that this legislation unfairly singles out the transportation sector and establishes an unattainable goal that could lead to transportation fuel policies that would harm our economy. Our primary concern is a practical one, which is that there is presently no means to achieve this goal set forth by the legislation. Refiners, such as ours, have very few options for producing viable fuels. Our primary concern, Presently, we have only two viable alternatives in control of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The first is to cut production. The second is to blend with more ethanol. Minnesota already has the nation's most aggressive biofuels mandate, which will eventually require every gallon of gasoline to be blended with 20% ethanol. This leaves us with very few options to further reduce emissions other than by possibly cutting production, which would increase fuel prices and cost us jobs. Another concern is that there would be no way to know if the legislative goal is being met. There is presently no consensus on how to count carbon emissions derived specifically from transportation fuels. There is currently much debate over what actually constitutes a low-carbon fuel and whether direct or indirect emissions would be considered part of that equation. These efforts to classify transportation fuel sources by their carbon intensity would have the unintended consequences of discouraging our use of Canadian crude in favor of lower carbon fuel sources from elsewhere in the world. This could undermine Minnesota's energy security and would have the net effect of increasing greenhouse gas emissions if Canadian crude is transported to faraway countries with lower emission standards than ours. Finally, we are concerned that this legislation, while well-meaning, would be used to justify more controversial and far-reaching policies, such as the proposed low-carbon fuel standard. While we oppose the low-carbon fuel bill for many of the same reasons mentioned here, we think that this particular legislation should be reviewed independently without prescribed conditions created by House File 1047. In closing, I want to stress that Flint Hills Resources prides itself on its industry-leading environmental performance. In 2007, the overall regulated air emissions per barrel for our Pine Bend refinery were 68% lower than the industry average. Since 1997, we reduced our average per barrel criteria of air emissions by 71%. Flint Hills currently ranks 7th lowest in criteria air emissions per barrel among the 50 largest refineries in the United States. In 2004, we received a Clean Air Award from the U.S. EPA for our industry-leading programs in reducing flaring. We know the following sound environmental practices are important to the people of Minnesota. They are important to us, too. While we oppose this legislation, Flint Hills Resources is committed to working with the legislature to maintain the highest environmental standards while continuing to provide fuels that are needed to power our region and keep our economy moving. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. McDaniel. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. My first question is, if transportation should not take a proportional reduction to accomplish our statewide goal, then which industry do you think should take a greater than proportional reduction?
Ms. McDaniel.
I think that this legislation, as it is right now, doesn't single out any one particular industry or sector, and it's currently an overall goal. And so I think that we need to use the existing technologies that we have to help achieve those goals.
Representative Portman?
Well, if we don't reduce our carbon emissions 25% in transportation, then we would need to increase or decrease our emissions by a lot more in, like, agriculture or the commercial sector, or residential, or the energy supply sector, or forestry. And I'm just wondering, which one of those sectors do you think should absorb the reductions that transportation shouldn't be responsible for?
Ms. McDaniel.
I don't know that I would say that one sector or another should take disproportional values. I think that each policy needs to be reviewed as it comes before the committees on reducing greenhouse gas emissions to meet their goals.
Representative Portman.
Well, I think the statement you just made is a statement in support of the legislation. And if you don't think that anybody should take a disproportionate hit in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, then that would mean that you think transportation should take a proportional reduction, and that's exactly what this bill would do.
I think,
Madam
Chair, Representative, I think that every policy that has been introduced has gone through the committee process and needs to be reviewed. I don't know that any one sector has been called out in the goals, and I don't think that transportation needs to necessarily either.
My second question is about, you made a statement that Flint Hills couldn't reduce the carbon intensity of their fuel other than to cut production or increase the proportion of ethanol, but couldn't you source lower carbon biofuels, and couldn't you also reduce the carbon intensity of your production processes?
Ms. McDaniel.
Currently, Flint Hills is fairly energy efficient, so there's only so much leeway as far as the production that we can have at Flint Hills. And then second, the second part of your question, I think that we can only use the technology available to us, and right now there's no other fuel that we could blend besides corn-based ethanol.
Representative Portman.
That doesn't quite get to the question that I asked about ethanol, though, is couldn't you source ethanol that is produced with less carbon intensity?
Ms. McDaniel.
Sorry, I don't know the exact answer to your question, but I'd be happy to discuss that with you further.
Members, I just want to remind you that we have a lot of bills today, and we really need to be a little bit more economical with our time. So
I'm going to have one last question.
Okay, thank you. Representative Portman.
And that is, do you use any renewable energy at the facility?
Currently, we're a customer of XL Energy.
All right, thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'll be brief. First of all, I think that all sectors should be treated fairly in this. And I get concerned about the issue of raising prices, concerned about the effect on the agriculture sector as well in the future. I wonder if Representative Hornstein has any bills to regulate the greenhouse gas emissions of say cows.
Representative Hornstein.
I think that's more of a local decision. No. I think there's a good point that's been brought up by the testifier, and I think it's also implicit in Representative Erdahl's question, and that is, why are you singling out transportation? Well, you know, we're well on the way. The two largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Minnesota are through electricity. That's 34%, and transportation, which is, you know, roughly a quarter, as I mentioned. We're all well on the way to addressing the electricity issue when we passed the renewable energy standard a couple of years ago, and that's a mandate. It's pretty straightforward legislation, and so now we need to play a little catch-up. And we're playing catch-up both in terms of the public education and policy arena by letting the public know that this is an important sector for greenhouse gas emissions, and we're playing catch-up in terms of what the state is really going to do. We can throw out all the goals we want and studies, but this is actually really in a meaningful way acknowledging this problem. And just very quickly, since the testifier said, well, we don't really have a plan, and it's a point well taken, but members, this is where transit comes in, this is where alternative fuel vehicles and electric cars comes in, this is where the low carbon fuel standard comes in, this is where biofuels, particularly next generation biofuels, come in. So we have a lot of, and I know this is the cliche of the session, right? Everyone has to say this at least once, tools in the toolbox. So we have a lot of tools in the toolbox. The other one is, the Representative Cole says it every other day, kicking the can down the road, so I'll have to use that another time. But but we do have a lot of tools in the toolbox as far as addressing this issue in the transportation sector, but we've got to get going. I mean, we don't have all the time in the world to address this, and so this is a good time and a good bill to get the process started.
We need to keep moving with questioners. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, is there a definition of transportation sector anywhere?
That's a very good point. I would say, I'll defer to Mr. Burris. I don't know if we have transportation sector defined in state.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not aware of a definition of that phrase.
And Representative Hornstein, I'm just trying to sort this out, and that how you would even make this accounting, and if a farmer is, doing work associated with the production of agriculture, but they're driving a truck, is that a reduction in agricultural, or is it a reduction in transportation? And how do you factor in If you have transit options that are, do you factor in the fuel efficiency of all the people that are riding transit? Does that accrue to the transportation sector? Or is it only hard amounts? It's really good to have a goal, but I'm not so sure I understand how you're defining transportation sector and how you would even measure it.
Representative Kornstein.
We have some, in another bill that this committee is going to hear, House File on 899, I think in a matter of a few minutes. Some of this is outlined, but let me just say that about 70% of the transportation fuel consumed is in automobiles and trucks. So that takes care of that right away. You also have, the aviation sector, that accounts for several percent. You have freight rail, that accounts for several percent. I mean, this information is out there. It can perhaps be somehow statutorily incorporated, but we know exactly where these emissions are coming from. That's not a problem. But I think maybe to define transportation sector in the legislation, that's a good point, Representative Goldberg, and maybe we need to do that. But there's no mystery as to what constitutes greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector, but that could probably be itemized in such a way where it's clearer. I acknowledge that.
Perhaps that can be addressed in environment policy, and if that's all right, that's where bill is going next.
I'm sure I'm not going to slow down on this thing today, but I really don't want environmental policy defining transportation definitions.
All right. Well, perhaps
no offense to the environmental crowd,
okay.
But
well, perhaps when Representative Hausman presents her bill, is there language in that bill that might address this?
That's what I my understanding. But members, I'll say this on the record that if there's a way to statutorily make this clear, Mr. Burris and I will work on it, and certainly we'll clarify that. It's a good point.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Well, is this to this point? Okay, thank you.
I know Hortman, he's in the back of the room and probably doesn't want to speak to it at this point, but the Pollution Control Agency has an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions by sector, and so it may be useful if the two of you work on this issue offline to look at what they've included, because they dealt with this issue in the MCAG process and sorting out what belongs to what sector. And we do have a statewide inventory of greenhouse gas emissions by sector done by the PCA.
All right, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I only have one question. For Ms. Daniels, if she leaves, could you tell me what percentage of the gasoline and fuel your refinery sells in the state of Minnesota? Are there other suppliers other than your supply?
Ms. McDaniels.
Or what percentage do you have in the state?
Sure. Currently, Flint Hills provides about 50% of the market share for Minnesota. I believe there are other suppliers to the Magellan Pipeline. And if you go up north, there is a refinery in Superior, Wisconsin, and there is a refinery in North Dakota as well. But they're quite small in comparison.
Thank you. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I've got a couple questions for the author, and I don't think we need to speed through this thing. I mean, this is stuff, I think we need to slow way down on this. First of all, I'd ask for a roll call on the bill itself. Second of all, Representative Hornstein, what was that food that you passed around?
Pumentation.
Lepta?
I heard it's Kalashi Day in New Prague, but this isn't related.
Well, Madam Chair and Riffin and Hornstein, that was, Mr. Chairman, that was very, very good. A couple questions, though. I wish the bill was that good. First of all, I happen to believe that, yeah, we don't want greenhouse gases, we don't want a lot of emissions and all that, but I think the premise as far as climate change or global warming is I think we're under a false premise on that. But one question, several questions. First of all, what happens in, you know, your bill is just a few sentences. What happens if these goals are not met? I don't see any, I mean, you got some goals out there, and that's fine and wonderful, but what happens if they're not met? Are they going to take away your birthday, or what are they doing here?
Just one moment, Representative Hornstein, before you answer the birthday question. But audience and members, we are getting a lot of feedback electronically. Would you please turn off your electronic devices? Representative Hornstein.
Members, again, this is, I think there's precedent for legislation where we have in statute. When I was involved in solid waste, for example, we had recycling goals set out for the state. And this, it sent a clear message as to what the state's policy was, and it prompted a lot of increases in recycling. I don't think there were any, the counties that didn't meet the goal weren't censured or penalized. This is just a much stronger way of saying what we already have in statute, and that's why it's a bill of straightforward and simple. But no, we're not going to have penalties or fines or no one will be taken to jail. But it sets out what the policy of the state is in a very clear and direct way, and we need to have that in order to move forward.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, this is all fine and dandy here with, we're making ourselves feel real good that we're doing something here. But how many bills are going to be coming forward? I see other bills on the agenda for today that are going to kind of work into this to get us here. I mean, I just get the feeling since I've come back after 2-year vacation that everybody seems to want my 85 Suburban and take away from me, and I'm not giving it up. You can't have it. And I see little cars I'm supposed to get into and these bills here and things like that. Do you see a whole lot of other bills coming at us here? Because, I mean, this is like the camel's nose in the tent. This is a slippery slope, Mr. Chairman.
He's adding to the... are people keeping track of these?
Double ready.
For the freshmen, these are... you're going to hear a lot of these on the floor.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and Representative Davis, well, first of all, you're referring to electric cars. There's a new generation which are... your car could potentially be electric under the legislation we're going to hear later in the future. But we have again a number of options moving into the future to address this issue. We're not taking things away from people. We're actually giving people more choices and more options to do something that again is in the common good. It's also reducing greenhouse gases. It's also reducing our dependence on oil, foreign and domestic, from stable and unstable places around the world, which is a national security issue. So you really get a twofer with this. When we reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we're also reducing oil consumption. And regardless of your opinions on ethanol, in Minnesota, we do have a growing ethanol industry, which I hope will be moving into the next generation of fuels, and that's also a helpful thing.
Are there any other individuals who would like to testify at this time? All right, seeing none, there has been a roll call asked for, so the clerk will take the roll. Representative Holbert? No, okay. Okay, when the clerk is ready, she will take the roll.
Hornstein?
Aye.
Whale?
Aye.
Campion?
Aye.
Davis?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Portman?
Aye.
Leader?
Aye.
Mason?
Yes.
McFarlane?
No.
Morrow?
Aye.
Rosenthal?
Aye.
Torkelson?
No.
Kurdahl?
No.
Welty?
Yes.
There were 10 ayes and 5 nays, so the bill, House File 1047, to be recommended to the Committee on Environment Policy, has carried. Thank you, Mr. Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, House File 899, Representative Hausman. Okay. Since Chair Hornstein is wandering in the wilderness, I will call on... Thank you. Representative Hausman is... would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I will move House File 899, and then as we go into the discussion,
will determine whether we have to refer to somewhere else if we're going to make a change.
All right. Well, if you'd like to go ahead
and first of all, I will move House File 899. And then I believe you have an amendment in your packet, A2. Ignore the A1 amendment if you have it, because that's been redrafted into an amendment that makes two changes. And the first one, and I would move the A2 amendment, line 1-2 I'm going to call the Terry Morrow amendment, because we haven't changed the policy goal on 2-6 to provide transit services throughout the state, but I thought it might be helpful to say to all counties it. And so we are, I'm suggesting that as an obvious amendment to strike throughout and insert to all counties in, to be very clear about a goal that we don't currently achieve. And then on page 2, line 33, I'm going to move this, even though I'm going to then make a further suggestion. This comes to us, the two women who are with me, by the way, today are Lynn Bly, who's the Transportation Connections Director from Fresh Energy, and Bart Solman, Program Consultant for Transportable Communities, and one of them did have an opportunity to speak with MnDOT, who indicated they're generally comfortable with the bill, but they requested this 1-3 just to make certain that we're in line with other language moving through, and so we delete will achieve and instead have a goal of achieving. And I would that's an author's amendment.
All right. In order to get the bill into the shape Representative Hausman would like, we will be voting on the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment passes. And now if you'd address the bill.
And then, Madam Chair, because I understand that Section 3, the reducing vehicle miles traveled, already exists in a bill that I believe is Representative Hornstein and that is already moving through the process and that has already been to environment. I'm inclined to delete that portion in this bill because then I don't believe I have to go to the environment committee. So since it's already traveling in a separate form and has been through that committee, we can take action on that after we present the bill if that should be I'm looking to.
All right, if that's important
to you in some direction.
Representative Hornstein, would you be willing to accept that?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's
we'll include that.
We'll just include that deletion then as agreed upon.
So, Madam Chair, this bill updates state transportation goals. In order to more accurately reflect, there's really not anything new here. It reflects federal law, state law, and current MnDOT practice. And it also seeks to improve Minnesota's ability to measure system performance. Big words around here this year are accountability and outcomes. And so I think it sets the context for that. The agency purpose that we have before us was adopted in 1976 when the Transportation Department was created. Transportation goals were added in 1991, and there were some amendments in 2008. And I will just briefly talk through the changes. In Section 1, federal transportation law has added requirements for states to plan for, develop, and operate an integrated multimodal transportation system. Bicycle and pedestrian facilities are included in that federal requirement. The new language reflects that direction. In Section 2, since October 1991, federal surface transportation law has included specific direction about the scope and intent of the federal requirement for statewide planning and management of transportation systems. These specific federal requirements, if you have this sheet, are listed at the end of this document, and for your information, you understand that federal direction. In Subdivision 2.1, this language provides that a desired outcome that is measurable and that is consistent with Minnesota's Toward Zero Deaths initiative. subdivision 2, 2, and 4. The changes make the language clearer. They support Minnesota's economy. And, again, they add consistency with federal goals. Subdivision 5, the tourism, reflects the economic significance of tourism and helps to ensure that the quality of the trip can be as important as the ability to make the trip, consistent with MnDOT's focus on context-sensitive design. Subdivision 7, we establish accountability as a goal consistent with current MnDOT management philosophies and practice. Subdivision 9, we ensure that transportation funding is prioritized toward a goal of maintaining the state's infrastructure in a state of good repair. Subdivision 15 sets a more ambitious goal for transit use. That's the one we just amended to assure that every county is included. Subdivision 14 adds walking to the state goals and establishes a more ambitious goal for both walking and biking. And then Section 3 is the one we just talked about. It's consistent with the federal goal on energy conservation, Minnesota's Next Generation Energy Act, and the recommendations from the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. But as I indicated, I believe it's traveling already in a separate group that Representative Hornstein has. So that one, if I delete it from this bill, it would not have to go to the Environment Committee. So with that, it's a quick overview, but I have two experts with me who can answer whatever questions.
Representative Hausman, I've been advised that we do need to vote to delete Section 3. So members, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask, do we need to discuss that? Saying nobody wants to discuss that. Okay.
Madam Chair, yeah,
Representative David.
Okay. So we're talking about the motion is to delete Section 3?
Correct.
I mean, that's the one I was going to start having a little discussion on. I can have a discussion on it. I mean, you're telling me I...
Well, Representative Davis, I think what... yes, Representative Hornstein.
You'll, I think, have a crack at this next week or in the near future when my land use bill comes to the Transportation Committee. So, you'll have a good chance to bone up and...
Okay, because, I mean, reducing miles traveled, how are you going to get out to Fillmore County to the bed and breakfast capital of the world? I mean, this is very anti-rural Minnesota.
We're going to build, Representative Davis, we're going to build a rail and bus
connection. Okay, Representative Hausman and Representative Davis and Representative Hornstein, maybe we can talk about this after this session.
Right.
Well, I don't assure him he'll have a chance to debate.
You will have plenty of time to debate that particular provision. Yes.
Well, can I remove that? I really want to win one here.
Representative Davis moved to remove Section 3 from House File 899. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Representative Davis, you're a champion. Okay.
I like that.
I thought you were something remarkably familiar.
We are still going to build that rail line and bus system.
Okay. I promised to ride there. I've been invited to the county fair for his county. So, Representative Hausman, please introduce your...
I don't think they have separate statements. They are simply here should there be questions about transportation.
Are there any questions from the members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hausman, thank you for the Morrow Amendment we had in last session that I was chagrined to have to carry, so at least this one I support. The only thing I would just suggest to MnDOT, not only to all counties, but among the counties, make sure that inter-county transit is part of their discussion when we talk about goals.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. Any other members? Yes, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 1, where it says minimize fatalities and injuries for transportation, I think there's some conflicting issues here because they're saying we all have to drive Priuses, and effect is what we're saying throughout the legislature this year. If everybody had an 85 Suburban, there'd be fewer fatalities and injuries throughout the state, first of all. And second of all, now we're in a bill, we're saying that we have to increase walking. So rather than me being able to drive, now I've got to walk. on page 2.24.
Representative Houseman.
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, I'm glad you mentioned that again because when you mentioned it earlier, I was going to suggest that if you help us build that entire system of intercity regional rail and public mass transit in the Twin Cities and pedestrian and bike access where transit exists, you probably can even keep driving your Suburban because we'll so lower greenhouse gases that you can go right on living in the manner you're accustomed to.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Houseman. I just want to know if it would take to have you guys leave me alone. Thank you.
Okay. Any other members?
If you help us, we'll help you.
Representative Holder.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. I'm a little concerned or confused. Is part of your bill also in a HOSH bill related to land use?
Representative Houseman.
Not that we are aware of.
Representative Holder. Madam Chair, if you're not aware of any language related to reducing vehicle miles in Post File 1035.
That portion is something we just deleted. We just deleted the portion on reducing vehicle miles.
Okay, and if I might, so then this same language was in your bill, it was in Hosh's bill, and it's also in a Hornstein bill, is that correct?
I just knew about the Hornstein bill, I don't know about the Hosh bill. None of us
seem
to know about the
Hosh bill.
Madam Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Thulam, who is very familiar with the Hosh bill, is indicating that it is that language is there as well.
And Madam Chair, and maybe this might have to be a phone a friend, will this committee then be seeing the HOSH bill as well if this language is in that bill?
Representative Hornstein?
Madam Chair and Representative Holbrook, my understanding is that the HOSH bill is still in Representative Pulaski's GovOps committee, and so I can't predict what will happen there, if it will get heard there and where it will go after that, but I would imagine if that bill moves on, we would hear it in this committee.
Right, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. Any other members? All right. Representative Houseman, would you like to renew your motion?
I would, and now that that section is deleted, I believe Representative Hornstein, though with that section it would have gone to the environment, without that section, does it go directly to the floor, or where do you send it?
Right now, this bill should be placed on the general register. If the fiscal note isn't ready, it looks like the preliminary shows there is no cost. But if there is a cost, it will be pulled back from the floor and heard in Representative Leaders Committee, I believe. All right. So those supporting House File 899 as amended, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The bill passes. All right.
We're crazy. We have lost our mind.
All right. House File 571. Representative Saylor. Representative Taylor, I think there's a little confusion up here. We don't know if you want this to be an informational hearing or if you're wanting to move the bill or an amendment. Can you please clarify?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to clarify. Yes, indeed. Because I have testifiers that drove down about 4 hours today through some very bad roads, I wanted to be sure anyway, that they had the opportunity to testify before you. I have been working in very close consultation with many other parties to try and pull this together with an amendment, but because of your 24-hour rule, which I want to respect, I will explain the amendment that I've been working with other representatives on, Westrom and Norris and others, but for right now, just because they will not be able to testify otherwise. think if that is satisfactory, Madam Chair.
I believe that's just fine. So if we could have you introduce your first testifier, that would be great.
And I would just say a few words first, so
sure.
Appreciate that.
Representative Saylor.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, I appreciate your indulgence in allowing my constituents to be able to testify today before you, and I will give a brief explanation of the bill and of how it's, had we had the amendment prepared in time, it would say. If you wanted to look at the bill, the proposal is to strike Section 1, Section 2, and Section 5. And what this effectively does is remove any and all possible notations with Section 84, which would be about APVs and OHVs. But we have these constituents, Dennis and Bruce Bolton, brought this to my attention several months ago, and I have visited with them for a long time about these fuel-efficient vehicles and how they use them and with the problems that they have when they drive town in the normal course of business, and they often have little chats with the local sheriff, which has been kind of blowing things up. I think that Dennis will be talking about that as well. But I have been working with the counties on this bill. I've been working with the DNR on this bill. I have had conversations with the State Patrol and also with the DMV. And I've also been working with representatives of Tori Westrum and Buck Nornis, who also have concerns for constituents that have these same desires to be able to drive these vehicles. I think one thing that's really important to note is that this is so much about fuel efficiency. And I know you had that discussion earlier. Fuel efficiency is incredibly important, and certainly to our small businesses, which these folks represent today, small businesses in agriculture, and they would like to be able to make that case before you.
All right.
So I think.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you. Both Mr. Dennis Bolton and Mr. Bruce Bolton. It's very convenient. You both have the last same last name. Please share your testimony with us. Mr. Bolton.
I'm Dennis Bolton, a farmer from Park Rapids, Minnesota, and I have one of these little mini trucks, and I use it on the farm for all the time, checking fields and going to town. I live 10 miles from town. It's so efficient, they get 40 plus miles per gallon. I have another pickup that gets about 12, and so I choose to run the more efficient one. And I use it a lot, but I started getting stopped by the sheriff or the DNR, and I had a license on it, and I would like to be able to put a license that I could drive anywhere. That's about what I'd like to say about it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Bolton. And Mr. Bruce Bolton, please identify yourself for the tape.
Yes. My name is Bruce Bolton, and I do live in the Park Rapids area. I think there's a photograph or a picture circulating of what these mini trucks look like. It looks something like this. My wife and I own a summer stock theater. We it's a for-profit enterprise. We don't get grants or subsidies of any sort, and our theater business requires us to do a lot of running around. We do have to, zip to town for something. These vehicles have a great deal of utility in that, it is a pickup. It can haul quite a bit of stuff. We, these aren't any sort of a joyriding ATV kind of a vehicle. There aren't balloon, knobby tires on it. We don't go on trails. We just go down the side of the road and try to go about our business. I think part of the thing that is puzzling to us is that motorcycles that have far less safety equipment that we could, jump on with no helmet and go where we need to go, of course, they would have no trouble. They wouldn't experience the troubles that we do, just you know, trying to go about our business. Smart car is obviously a fuel-efficient vehicle as well. Dimensions are far smaller than one of these, and yet they seem to be fine. Also, we, from the digging I've done, and probably somebody here can answer this better, but it appears that I could build my own car, and the threshold for passing any safety requirements for that seems to be far lower. And in fact, it almost appears that if I put lights on it and send in a couple of photographs and sign an affidavit that it wasn't stolen, that I could drive one of those. And I may be misinformed on that, but it seems like the bar is set pretty low even for a home-built vehicle. Ironically, I think this would be considered a motorcycle if it was three wheels. And so if we could, you know, if the physics were there and we could remove one wheel and go to town that way, maybe we would. I know that some other states are referring to these as all-purpose vehicles. These go too fast to be a slow-moving vehicle. They, in my uncle's case, they're not considered a vehicle of husbandry implements, so they can't be a farm vehicle. So I feel like these, you know, that the fault isn't so much that these vehicles are freakish or all that odd, but just that they lack a definition, and they lack a real study of them to put them on the road. Sure, they're a little smaller than a conventional pickup, but they get the job done for us.
All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen. It's wonderful to have you here. Thanks for driving probably through some pretty interesting roads this morning to get here. I have on the agenda Mr. Percy Anderson, who wanted to testify. Is he here?
Percy's off to the side. He won't be testifying, but he represents another part of the piece of the puzzle here. Fixed income. He lives down the road from Park Rapids. You know, certainly when gas prices get to be $4 and these things get 40 plus miles to the gallon, fixed income guy like him who has some projects that he wants to get done, who wants to socialize at the Great Northern Cafe or get a cup of coffee, he's able to do that with a vehicle like this.
All right. Well, welcome, Mr. Anderson. I'm glad that you're here as well. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you said this, I missed it. What is the top speed?
Mr. Bolton.
Well, I think 55. I usually drive mine around 50. 55 or 60, I'm told. I'll pass to you drive here.
Mr. Bolton.
But I think they will go 70.
Representative Taylor, do you have a comment? No. Okay, Representative Erdahl.
So if you could pass somebody who is going 53, just make sure you don't go 10 miles over the speed limit when you pass.
Representative Erdahl.
Could you have driven down here today with them then?
Mr. Bolton. I chose to drive our Prius car, we could have driven.
Representative Erdahl.
Now my most important question. Could Representative Davis have fit in the meeting?
Mr. Bolton.
Careful.
Mr. Bolton.
Right about here.
Yes, he could fit in.
All right, thank you. Representative Davis, a comeback.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, just a couple quick questions here. And I think they're for Representative Saylor. What is the manufacturer's warranties here? What does the owner's manual say as far as if these, does it say off-road use only or in the farmyard only, or what does it say?
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative David. Actually, I've never read the manual for these vehicles, so I can't tell you exactly what it says. But they are, all of the mini vehicles or the mini trucks that I'm aware of are all manufactured overseas and imported. They are imported as an off-road vehicle because they meet different standards. And I do believe that the State Patrol will be, you know, talking about that when you, I don't know if you want them to testify today or you know, at a different time. But at any rate, because they are manufactured to different standards. I think that's really what the question is here, is the standard situation. I believe it was mentioned that these trucks are available and are driven in several other states. I want to say 17. I may be incorrect about that, but somewhere in that neighborhood. Many other states do allow them with different regulations and at different, you know, registered as some of them as OHVs, some as ATVs. So there is discrepancy all across the board. Actually, the ideal thing would be if the federal government would find a way to make sure that when these were imported into the United States that they met our safety standards, and that then folks such as our retired citizens and agriculture, small businesses, anyone else that wanted to drive a small vehicle such as these trucks would be able to do so. Interestingly enough, I've spoken with people that have said that these are all over in France and in other places as well because of their fuel economy and because they make such good sense. However, we do have some issues with that, and I'm sorry I haven't read the manual, Representative Davis. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Taylor, you believe about seven states license these as like autos, basically? Or several states? Or?
Madam Chair and Representative Davis. Several other states do have a variety of mechanisms to allow these vehicles. I know that Mr. Matt Burris would know exactly which ones these are. And if you would bear with me, I could dig through my pages.
Well, Representative Taylor and Davis, we have about 16 minutes left with two more bills. Would it be possible for us to have this further discussion when we are actually moving the bill? Would that be possible? Would you be...
Madam Chair, we're not voting on this today.
No, this is an informational hearing.
That's fine.
All right. So, once again, I want to thank both Mr. Bolton and Mr. Anderson for your long journey to the Capitol. I hope you've enjoyed your day here, and we certainly will keep your testimony in mind when we hear this bill formally. So thank you very much. At this time, I would like to call up Representative Hornstein for House File 1250. Number five, I don't know what my brain is doing. I'm still on another time zone, I guess, but we do have a half an hour left. I was thinking we were done at 2:15. I don't know if that was wishful thinking or what. So we do have more time to discuss this.
Members, this isn't, thank you, Madam Chair, this is not nearly as controversial as my first book. So, I will give some brief testimony. I have a couple.
Representative Hornstein, if you could please move the bill first.
Sure, and there's an amendment that lets us move it, House File 1250. I've talked to Representative Hilty, he would like to see this bill, so I'd like to move it to the Energy Committee. There's no financial implications.
All right. Representative Hornstein moves House File 1250, possibly to be moved to the Energy Committee. And would you please move your amendment?
Okay.
Is the A2 amendment?
Yes. And Madam Chair, the amendment is in. We had this one section of the bill did generate a little bit of interest and controversy, and that had to do with. The use of HOV lanes for electric cars, and the DPS had some concerns, and we met with them, and I hope that the A2 amendment addresses those concerns.
All right. To get the bill in the order that Representative Hornstein wants, all those in favor of the amendment, A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No? All right, it passes. I guess I have to do that. Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
House File 1250 is a bill that deals with electric car infrastructure. And what we mean by that, members, is charging stations, primarily ways in which we can promote the use of this emerging technology. This idea comes from some of my readings about a company called Better Place, and there's Better Place and several other companies in the Silicon Valley who I think have come up with a very interesting idea. The problem with electric cars in the past, Madam Chair and members, has been they've been produced, but people haven't been able to drive them terribly far. You know, you could get halfway to Preston from here and then run out of electricity, and then what do you do? So that's been really, you know, part of the problem. And so an entrepreneur named Shai Agassi started a company called Better Place, and as I said, there are other companies similar to that. And they really believe that the key to electric cars really taking off in our country and around the world is to build out an infrastructure of charging stations, as well as places to exchange the battery. Their business model actually has people renting the battery, which is another problem because the batteries are $6,000 and really raise the total price of the car. So you would rent out the battery from them as you would a cell phone or purchase that, and then you'd have different plans, the all-you-can-drive plan, the drive-around-the-neighborhood plan, and pay accordingly. And so this business model has been embraced by several countries. Australia, Israel, Denmark have formed partnerships with Better Place. We have Hawaii and the Bay Area as well that are involved. And again, the idea here is to build out some electric car infrastructure so that around 2012, when we believe these cars will be in a lot more mass production, people will really be able to afford them and will really not have to worry about where they would have to stop and charge them. Now, the final thing I wanted to say about Better Place, and I would really refer you to this New York Times article by Tom Friedman that appeared a couple of months ago, is that they have signed a agreement with Renault-Nissan, and so Renault-Nissan is ready to mass produce these vehicles, and they have you know, your basic type of car that I would drive, you know, there's a smaller version, but they also have crossovers and SUVs in production, so that both myself and Representative Davis would be able to have our consumer choices and preferences honored with electric vehicles. And so, members, I will just, I have, again, Mr. Pauly, and I believe Mr. Seitz is here as well. Just two quick testimonials, and then I would be happy to answer questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Could the first testifier introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Erin Sogin-Rockelow. I'm with Fresh Energy. I'm actually the senior clean energy policy associate there. As you heard a little bit earlier today, Fresh Energy is a nonprofit and nonpartisan group that works on state, regional, and national public policy to achieve a clean, fair, and efficient energy system and global warming solutions. Fresh Energy would like to thank Representative Hornstein for offering this bill. We strongly support cleaner 21st century vehicles, including increasing use of electric vehicles in Minnesota. We're here today, obviously, in support of the bill, and I'm going to speak very broadly in support of it, and then my colleague Ethan Bawley, who's with the Transportation Program, will offer more details. Electric vehicles offer Minnesotans the chance to expand to our transportation system the economic and environmental benefits we are increasingly enjoying from developing our clean electricity resources. Minnesota's clean energy resources can power our homes and our cars, and our citizens reap the jobs and economic development to boot. Further, since electric vehicles are generally charged at night when the electricity market demand is low but wind production is high, electric vehicles offer an opportunity to better integrate renewable wind electricity into our state's electricity grid. Finally, electric vehicles, which are more efficient and less polluting, are another transportation tool to help us reach Minnesota's global warming pollution reduction goals in ways that help us grow our economy. They're also an important step in reaching energy independence. And with that, my colleague, Ethan Foley, Transportation Coordinator, will go into the details a bit further.
Thank you. First of all, Representative Leader, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I'm wrong, but check the amendment on line 1.7. I think it's got a wrong deletion. Shouldn't be line 28. Is that correct?
Representative Hornstein, can you please look at
line 1.7, did you say?
Just in the interest of time, I think I'll Madam Chair, I'll defer to Mr. Burris and see if he can help out on.
Mr. Burris, please.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Leader, I'm not quite clear on your question.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, Mr. Burris, you don't want to delete line 28, do you, on page 2?
Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, yes. Line 28 is one of the lines being deleted. It's from there on is to be removed along with two lines on the following page.
Representative Leader, do you have?
Maybe. Is line 27 complete then, the way it is?
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, yeah, line 27, the beginning of that sentence that you're seeing on 28 starts on line 27. That's removed as well in the amendment, and that's in the amendment text, it's 1.4. It deletes everything after the period on page 2, line 27, and inserts an additional sentence.
All right, thank you. Mr. Folley.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Folley. I work at Fresh Energy as well. I'll go into a few more of the details. Our transportation sector, as it's been standardly defined, accounts for 29% of the state's energy use. So as we move to electric cars, it really provides an opportunity for us to power our cars with energy made right here in Minnesota, and then that can help power our economy moving forward. That 29% can come straight from wind turbines and other resources right here in Minnesota. Also, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency did a report on air emissions related to conventional vehicles, and then looking also at plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. And they showed that in addition to reducing our global warming emissions, as we move to electric cars, we also can reduce air emissions from carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide, other things that we associated with our vehicles. And they show that as we move towards our other goals, with more wind turbines and more renewable energy, that we can see some pretty startling reductions in air pollution across the board, up to 90% reductions as we move towards electric vehicles compared to standard conventional vehicles. So with that, I'd like to renew our support for this bill, and thank again Representative Hornstein. This bill will lay the foundation towards moving towards that, helping drive our economy, and we ask the committee for their support as well. Thank you, and I'm available for any questions if you have any.
We have three people who would like to ask questions. First, Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein, I just have two quick questions because we've got two committees running at the same time here. In I believe Section 9 of the bill, you're modifying the state building code for electric cars to require all new construction to have a 40-amp put in the garage.
Representative,
I'm just curious as to, I mean, I understand cradle to grave, but this is in everything in between.
Representative Horn.
Thank you very much. I anticipated that question. I'm glad you asked it, Madam Chair. Representative Zeller. This is, again, we... I've been in contact with at least one company that is involved in this infrastructure issue, and it's very, very important that in new construction, again, we're trying to give consumers choices so that I'm not an electrician, but apparently we talked to the builders. This is pretty common already. The builders don't oppose this language. But what it does then is it says, you know, new homes in Minnesota will be outfitted for this. And members, the reason why I appreciated Representative Zeller's question is that this bill really sets out a big sign that says to the Silicon Valley-based entrepreneurs and Ford Motor Company and the car industry and GM and anyone else who's considering or planning to build these cars. And Ford really made a big splash at the auto show a couple of months ago about building an electric Ford Focus, that Minnesota is open for business when it comes to electric car infrastructure. And so that's why this language is in here.
Representative Zeller.
And the builders have told me, and we were very proactive with them, does this cause any problems? And they said no.
Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, well, your use of the word choice, I think, is a little dicey because you're mandating that they put it in. And anything that's being remodeled also has to have it in. So I would say, I mean, I guess I'm just concerned with the cost of housing the way it is. And I don't know. I'm not an electrician either. I'm not sure what it's going to cost to put it in. And if you got a hot tub or something else out back, maybe you need a 40 amp for that, I guess. But my concern is that you're mandating something that maybe somebody doesn't want. And I see some of the home building folks are here. But I just have one other question, Representative Mr. Chairman. The traditional way we hear about, you know, we need to raise the gas tax is the user fee. Raise the gas tax to pay for the roads. The hybrids, obviously, which is good, they get great gas mileage. However, they don't use that much gas, but they're using the roads that those of us are paying for the gas tax are. Do you have a fee structure or something set up in here? Because this energy has to come from somewhere, and obviously the homeowner ratepayers are going to have to, in some cases, pick up the slack or pick up the excess energy or the juice we're using for these cars. So, is there a way in your bill to offset that rather than having the residential homeowners who don't drive Priuses, how they're going to help those folks pay the bill?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Ellis. This speaks to, I think, a much broader and very, very critical conversation that, you know, Representative Leader was way out in front on several years ago, which is, you know, the gas tax is not going to be our choice way to fund roads into the future, and we're going to have to look at some alternatives, some of the mileage kinds of calculations, the experiment that was done in Oregon. We're going to have to move fairly quickly at adopting this. This bill isn't really meant to rejigger the entire transportation finance formula, although it is very important that we start to think about it. We're looking at possibly these changes going into effect perhaps in 2012 or so, in anticipation of a lot more production of electric vehicles. And so we want the state to be ready for that. We want the consumers to be ready for that. And we, as transportation leaders in the state, are going to have to be ready for it by really taking Representative Leader's suggestions a lot more seriously in terms of how we look at the way we finance roads into the future.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I'll take that as a no then. I don't think we should penalize other people who don't choose to drive these cars by making a per-mile tax. I know that's the next thing coming. And if you're going to use these cars, then however you want to do the formula is up to you. Obviously, you're the chair. But this energy, the juice for these, is going to come from someplace else. And it's going to end up being the ratepayers in homes that are going to actually, or businesses that are going to have their rates go up, that are going to be subsidizing this. And the alternative of we're just going to tax everybody but on a per mile basis, I don't think is a fair alternative. But again, as you said, this is a 2012 or somewhere out in the future. Hopefully we'll get to that part of the conversation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of questions. I guess I'll start in the area where Kurt left off and what you're going to require. And on page 6, lines 26 to 31, when you're talking about parking facilities and commercial structures, the way I read that, would you require this in shopping centers, in sports facilities? I mean, I'm not sure what your intent is, but the way I read it, virtually any place where you would park a car in the state of Minnesota, you're going to require this infrastructure.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes. We are looking at that fairly holistically. That's correct.
And Madam Chair, if I might, is this bill then going to the Commerce Committee?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbert, yes. I believe this would have to go to Energy and then Commerce.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Thank you. And I would, if you talked about giving consumers choice, well, I think you're taking away property rights. I mean, if I did a fairly extensive remodel of my house I didn't go anywhere near the garage. I don't anticipate having an electric car anytime soon, in the time in which I'm going to own that home. I don't know, I mean, what would it have cost me to have run this kind of service out to my garage if I did a remodel of more than 50% of the valuation of my home?
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, we do have the Builders Association here. I would not be able to answer that question specifically in terms of what the cost of this is. I know that my understanding is that, you know, many garages already have, you know, the capacity to do this. So I don't anticipate that it would be a huge burden on a homeowner.
In the interest of time and it being a Commerce Committee issue, I don't view your assertion that it's giving consumers a choice. I view it from the other end. You're putting a mandate on consumers, and I'm not comfortable with that. But
it's not the first time that you said tomato and I've been tomato.
Exactly.
Madam
Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Or is it Holstein?
Where's the mayor of Burnsville when he...
I believe Lisa Finette... Oh, no, you're there. Do you... Madam Chair, I can talk offline about this as long as this is probably going to move, but I think that this committee should really pay attention to the policy of allowing electric cars in HOV lanes. And had I known this was coming, I would have pulled out my file, but maybe one of your testifiers can enlighten the committee to the states that have allowed this and then have had to rescind it due to the clogging of the HOV lanes.
Well, Mr.
Fowley.
The language as amended, I think it directs the allows the Department of Transportation to explore the possibility.
And Madam Chair, I understand that, but as one legislator, I don't even want them to look at the possibility given the history in other states in which they've tried this. And HOV lanes are put into place for mobility purposes, not to reward people for energy efficient cars. And in my understanding, it's at least Virginia, and I mean, hopefully you know this information being as a field. If you'd please tell the committee the states that you're aware of that have allowed electric cars in HOV lanes and have had to then rescind that right.
Mr. Fowley.
Most of the concerns that have come up in other states have been where it was more broadly applicable to hybrid electric vehicles, where then when the market share for hybrid electric vehicles became much greater very quickly, that then states were forced to kind of rethink that. This, amended, would put in a sunset limit, allow the Department of Transportation to put in a sunset limit, so that they could determine, you know, this is the first few X number of electric cars that were to come forward would have that opportunity, but there would certainly be a sunset to that. The idea, we don't want to clog up lanes, and it also gives them the power to, on a daily basis, to say, to use our dynamic signage to say, today the traffic volumes are high enough in the HOV lanes that we're not going to allow electric vehicles in the lanes on this day. So they can change that by day. They have a lot of flexibility there, and that flexibility is built in to account for concerns that have come up elsewhere and some of the changes that have been made elsewhere to make it work more smoothly.
Well, Madam Chair, it's wholly possible that there would be a growth in electric cars similar to hybrid cars that would cause the same result. In addition, our HOV lanes, at least in the case of 394 and soon to be 35W, are going to have this dynamic pricing in which any type of single occupancy car can pay a fee in order to access the excess capacity. So what I need to know is that on a day when there was excess capacity, is it your intent that if you were in, let's just say, your E85 Suburban, you'd have to pay the fee, but if you were an electric car, you would not?
Representative Hornstein.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Holbrook, we are working in an ongoing way with MnDOT and DPS on this. It's my intention that if, you know, within their parameters, safety and otherwise, and this doesn't become any kind of onerous, you know, collection issue for them, that we want to tell people that, look, you're going to get a certain advantage if you buy a car that saves us greenhouse gas emissions and dependence on oil. And this is an incentive. Now, we have to update it so that we avoid the problems that took place in Virginia and Arizona. This is just going to have to be something that's talked through with the particular agencies, but it's a powerful incentive. And so we've already taken the initial step of modifying it to address some of the realities, and we'll continue to do that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Holder, again, it's just a reminder to the committee, we still have one more bill, and we have three more people who would like to speak to this particular issue.
And Madam Chair, I'm sorry, but I think this is a very important policy issue for this committee, and the issue of the agencies working to address this, we as the legislature have the responsibility to set the policy regarding whether or not we want to allow electric vehicles in the HOV lanes. And certainly electric vehicle owners already have many benefits. They don't pay the gas tax that everybody else does. They have the the do-gooder thing about being good for the environment, however you want to frame that, depending on your perspective, et cetera. But if, in fact, our transportation system is built to increase mobility, then what we are doing by doing this, especially if they're not even going to pay a fee as a single occupancy vehicle in times of congestion, we are basically giving them something that nobody else does by virtue of the fact of the type of car that they chose, and it'll actually reduce mobility and options for having people in those HOV lanes. It hasn't worked in other states, and I just think that it's a really, really, really bad policy provision, and I don't know that I probably don't have the votes here to take it out of the bill. I think that the committee really has to think long and hard about what our HOV lanes are for, and if they're for mobility, filling them up with an increasing number of electric cars. And I just have one other question. If an individual is in violation of the HOV lane, they pay a fee, and in your amendment you say that they're guilty of a petty misdemeanor, does it mean that the electric vehicle operators don't have to pay the hundreds of dollars that other people do as well?
Mr. Hornstein, or Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and President Holbrook, let me take the first point you made, and then we'll address the second point you made. In the legislation that this legislature passed last year that was signed by the governor into law related to the Urban Partnership Agreement in 35W, there is a report and assessment required as to mobility in the HOV lane. I think it's going to be very important that we take a look at that. After, I believe it's a year or two, and see what those traffic flows are. Now, if we're already having problems, then this we're going to have to modify this. We're going to have to take a look at it and see if it really makes the most sense. If, though, there are some, we're finding that there are not the kind of mobility issues that you're correctly concerned about, then I think, then we'll have to move forward and see. Again, this is going to depend a lot on how many cars are sold. I think it's a very important incentive, and I'd like to keep it there. But we don't have any idea yet whether this fear, in fact, will materialize. But we will have at least some indication, probably by 2012 or earlier, once the initial urban partnership agreement has been studied. Now, as far as the penalties, this is language that we worked on with the DPS. Perhaps they would want to address it, but maybe not. Doesn't sound like it.
Representative Holbrook, I'm going to urge you to kind of wrap up your
sentence. Well, Representative Hornstein, is it your intent that they just get off of the petty misdemeanor and not pay the same fee that any other driver in a regular vehicle would pay?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, I wasn't familiar with whether it was a petty misdemeanor or a misdemeanor, but you make a good point, and I imagine that we would have to make sure that there is balance and consistency in that. So
I will look at this with the DPS, and we may need to delete the word petty.
And I just one quick question. I know you're getting irritated with me, but
Madam Chair, it's a good point, and we can delete petty.
I just think they should have parity.
Yeah.
Do the same
crime,
I don't
disagree with you.
And
Representative Folker.
Okay.
My last question is, as you keep talking about 2012, but I'm looking at this, it looks like virtually every section of this bill is goes into effect the day following enactment. So I'm not understanding the 2012 issue.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, again, this is a bill that is meant to send a signal to many people who are looking to locate infrastructure for electric cars and possibly produce electric cars. Minnesota is open for business. We take this seriously, but this is an important policy. So this is as much an incentive to consumers as it is an incentive to businesses to build the infrastructure here, as well as consumers to use it. So that's why we have the enactment dates as they are.
We do have three more questioners. Just remember, we have ag policy coming in at 2:45, and we need to allow their CLA to be able to set up. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I appreciate your arguments of doing this to lessen the dependence of foreign oil. I agree with that 100%. I am concerned, though, both your testifiers were talking about global warming. We're actually in a global cooling situation right now where the climate is actually cooling. The science is in, the debate is over on that issue. But also talking about the electricity, they're talking about, yeah, wind, but wind is not steady and reliable. Most of this electricity is going to come from dirty coal and nuclear. Just for the record, I just want to make that clear. And I hope the global warming, when we're actually in a global cooling trend at this point, that the record be corrected for that. Because as I said, the science is in, the debate is over.
Representative Hornstein, any comments?
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, I agree. The science is in, the debate is over, global warming is real, and we're going to have to address it.
Madam Chair, that's not what I said for the record. That's not what I said.
All right.
That's not what I said at all. Global warming is a farce.
All right. Representative
Welty. I heard you say Representative Davis.
Representative Welty.
That was so sad.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to make a confession here, and it's to the first point that Representative Holberg raises, because I've always had less enthusiasm with all of my environmental buddies on this. I voted for other bills, and I will continue to, but if I always would ask myself, where would the first ounce of energy go, and where would the first bit of where would the first dollars be spent? It would be to continue public mass transit, moving people out of cars. This still is single occupancy vehicles. That's what this is, and we have to build infrastructure for that. We have to build roads and bridges, and I mean it is just. One of those things I've always had difficulty with in terms of how much energy we're putting into this as opposed to the other. But I think it's an argument worth making. It won't keep me from voting for the bill, but just to be clear, we are encouraging more single-occupancy vehicles on roads, and that means we invest more of our money into concrete roads and bridges.
All right, Representative Leader, I am about ready to take the vote on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I'd like to recommend that Representative Hornstein, I agree with Representative Holberg said it all, that's been our issue all the way through, and Representative Hausman just did it. I either think you should delete Subdivision 6 or lay it over and consider it, because really what we're doing, we're going contrary to everything that we wanted to do, and I couldn't have said any better than Representative Holberg. I may not agree with her all the time, but she's 100% right.
Representative Hornstein, are you willing to consider deleting that
section? Let me look at Representative Leader, if you could be specific about the exact provision that you're most concerned about, Madam Chair.
Section 4.
Subdivision 6 under 6 and 4, he said. Section 4. The electric vehicle exemption section.
I think we have to delete Section 3
as well, because that adds electric vehicles to dynamic overlay.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I will take your advice, because I would not be advised to not take your advice. So I think I would be happy to delete that section. We'll move the bill forward. We will have to have a conversation another day about this topic. The DPS does tell me that my language is consistent with existing law, but I will be happy to entertain Representative Leader's idea and move that that section be deleted from the bill.
I'm going to ask Mr. Burris to repeat that, please.
Mr. Chair and members, I would recommend deletion of a couple of sections if the goal of the amendment is to remove the electric vehicle use provision, the entire provision for electric vehicles being able to use HOV lanes. The amendment in that case would be page 1, delete section 2. Page 2, delete section 2. Sorry, let me start that over. Page 1, delete section 2. Page 2, delete section 3 to 4.
All right. So Representative Hornstein moves House File number 1250 as amended, with also this deletion. All those in favor?
Got to vote on the leader amendment.
Oh, we have to move the amendment. Please forgive me.
I would move the amendment as Representative Burris stated.
Oh, Mr. Burris, all right. All those in favor of this?
Mr.
Burris. Tell us if you want to be a representative. All right. Those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No? All right. Those in favor of House File 1250 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No?
No.
The bill has passed, and it will be moving to energy. I do not want to cause problems for ag policy. Representative Morrow does tell me that his bill is a two-minute bill. I guess I have to ask the body if you're willing to consider 2 minutes. Representative Morrow, quick.
Right. Madam Chair, members, I move that House File 668 be recommended this House and be put on the General Register. I was assured by Lieutenant Carroll here that this did get a two-minute hearing in the Senate. This has been the public safety already. This is to conform state post-crash inspections of school bus crashes with federal law, and to allow all large vehicle crashes to be treated in the exact same way. And I've let Lieutenant Carroll explain it further. But, Lieutenant, we might just wait to see if there are questions.
Representative Holbert.
Madam Chair, in an effort to expedite this, was there any opposition to this bill in committee or otherwise that you
Representative
know?
Morrow.
Madam Chair, Representative Holbert, no opposition. School bus operators support the bill.
All right. A quick 30-second comment. From
Madam Chair,
identify yourself, please.
Committee members, I'm Edward Carroll, representing Minnesota State Patrol. No, there's no opposition to this bill whatsoever. It basically simplifies confusing language. We have two separate standards for post-crash investigations, and it's confusing to officers on the scene. By moving it to be one standard, it eliminates that.
All right. Would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I renew my motion.
All right, Representative Morrow renews his motion that House File 668 be passed to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion carries.
Thank you, Madam President.
And we have to approve the minutes from last week. Okay, Representative Mason, would you move the minutes from March 4th?
I will so move. I have one question, though. On the minutes, it just said... Representative David moved in on my notes as amended. Do we need to have the amended in there?
No.
All right. Okay, then it's okay.
All right. So all those in favor of the minutes from last week, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. All right. The meeting is adjourned. Oh, that passes, and the meeting is adjourned.